Today's reading is from Daniel. In the first year of King Belshazzar of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head as he lay in bed. Then he wrote down the dream. I watched then because of the noise of the arrogant words that the horn was speaking. And as I watched, the beast was put to death, and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. As I watched in the night visions, I saw one like a human, coming with the clouds of heaven. And he came to the Ancient One and was presented before him. To him was given dominion and glory and kingship, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that shall not pass away, and his kingship is one that shall never be destroyed. The word of God for the people of God.
Well, how are those New Year's resolutions going for you right now? We're in a series talking about making changes, and we think about a lot of changes people typically identify, losing weight, saving money, getting finances in order, getting life organized, making relational changes. But we're not thinking about the specific changes. We're encouraging people to consider like an experiment, what that would be for yourself. What we're talking about are the common denominators each change has in being able to make that change last and make it stick. And we're looking at the life of Daniel in this series, not only because Daniel was somebody who was able to make significant changes and lived at a pretty high level of effectiveness, but his story, his life reveals some of the principles and the secrets that go into lasting change. And last week we looked at the power of spiritual help. Today we talk about the power of vision, the power of vision for making change. You could say that, and by the way, if you haven't already, I invite you to take out your outline for the message this morning. As we think about the role and the significance vision plays in change, you could say that vision is that ability to see what is not yet in existence but can be. That ability to see perhaps what other people can't see. And to get a little taste of what that gift is like with somebody, take a look at this video.
What do you see?
I
I just see trees.
Well, no one ever accused you of having a grand vision, do you?
What do you see when you look out at something like that? Hopefully, it's not just something to exploit. But vision is seeing things that maybe other people don't see. And the best kind of vision, the best, highest form of vision, is seeing what God sees. Thinking about what God can bring into reality that is not yet in existence, and to live toward that direction. Right before Christmas, Dr. Carver McGriff stopped by my office one day, and Carver and Marianne are sitting right here in front of me this morning, so it's fun to tell this story with Carver here today. This year, Carver, do you turn 93 this year? No. But somewhere close to it. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? I want to be like Carver one day. Doing just absolutely great. So he stops by the office one day. He was here to meet somebody and arrived a little early. So we sat down and started talking, and I don't even remember how we got onto the topic, Carver, but we started talking about the supernatural. And Carver told a story about a time not too many years ago when he and Marianne were vacationing in Bayeux, France. It was over a Sunday, so they went to worship in the cathedral. Now, Marianne speaks French, so she could follow along. And Carver looked up at the stained glass windows for the service and enjoyed the surrounding. And during the service, Carver became aware of some commotion around an individual in the pew that was opposite where he was sitting across the aisle. And he looked over and saw some people speaking to this elderly woman, and they helped her lie down in the pew, and so he realized something was wrong. But the service went on uninterrupted. A few minutes later, some paramedics came in and quietly started tending to the woman. So the service went on, and Carver was looking and noticing the sunlight that was reflecting through the windows, when all of a sudden, he saw a clear vision of a young woman smiling, looking up. And just like that, she vanished. And Carver said, I rubbed my eyes. I thought, what did I just see? I know I saw something. And just then he looked below where the vision was, and the paramedics were draping a sheet over the head of the woman. She had just died. That led us into a discussion about what heaven might be like. And we wondered if heaven might not be so much about a place as a condition. A condition of life when we are at our most vibrant and happiest. Well, what if heaven is like that? What would your life look like? Can you picture your life at your most vibrant, at your happiest? And it has nothing to do with age. It's about the way we see ourselves on the inside. Can you see yourself at your most vibrant and your happiest? If so, you've got quite a vision for your life. But sometimes realities of life get in the way of that vision. They can block, they can shield that vision. And we need something that keeps us going and persisting through those realities to keep striving for that. Think about how often God gives dreams and visions to people that inspire them in such a way that they are able just to persist through life going after that dream. God gave a dream to Abraham and had him picture a land that would be inhabited by all of his descendants one day. And Abraham woke up from that dream and spent the rest of his life pursuing it. His grandson Jacob had a dream of a ladder between heaven and earth. And God used that dream to instill in Jacob that same promise of his grandfather's, that that nation would come about through him. And one day Jacob was renamed Israel. God gave a dream to Isaiah that the The wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and a little child shall lead them. Ezekiel had a dream of a valley full of dry bones coming to life, and God used that dream to inspire God's people. Peter had a dream. He had a dream in which God clearly said to him, "Do not declare unclean what I declare clean." And when Peter woke up from the dream, he went into the home of a Gentile. He opened the church to non-Jewish people. Paul had a dream one day of a man in Macedonia saying, "Would you come and help us?" When Paul woke up from the dream, he took the gospel to Europe. How significant was that? Now, why doesn't God just tell people what to do? Why give people dreams? Because God understands that for us to make changes in life that really matter, we need more than the right information. We need inspiration. We need a picture of the way life can look that will keep us going when life gets difficult, because we hold on to that picture. And we say, "No, I believe that that's worth living for and living toward." Look at the quote that is in your outline by Parker Palmer. He says, "Every life is lived toward a horizon, a distant vision of what lies ahead. The quality of our action depends heavily on whether that horizon is dark with death or full of life. We do not dwell in the land of the living on the way to the land of dying. We dwell in the land of dying on the way to the land of living." That was a significant part of Daniel's life and ministry. Having a vision that moved people toward the land of the living. The word vision appears more in the book of Daniel than any other book in the Bible. You can divide the book of Daniel right in half. Chapters 1 through 6 are about stories of Daniel's life, but chapters 7 through 12 are all about Daniel's visions. And their visions meant to inspire people to keep pursuing God's dream for their lives. So I want us to think for a few moments this morning about the role of vision when it comes to being able to make changes stick in our lives. And this is really a neat message today to think about how vision actually works and how we make it practical. One of the things that we learned from Daniel is that vision does not deny reality, it transforms reality. Vision does not deny reality, it transforms reality. So vision always begins helping us understand why the place where we is, where we happen to be right now, where we are, is a place we need to move beyond. Now you might have noticed in the scripture reading this morning, it starts with the first chapter of Daniel's visions, chapter 7, verse 1, but then it jumps to verse 11. That's where Daniel paints a picture of God overthrowing all of God's enemies. But if you want a good exercise today, read the verses in between. The verses in between talk about spectacular visions of beasts with 10 horns and 4 wings. And we read parts of the Bible like that and we say, "That just sounds odd and confusing and I don't understand it." And we don't until we learn our history. You see, Daniel was written in the 2nd century BC during the aftermath of the Greek Empire. Following the death of Alexander the Great, the Greek Empire was turned over to his 10 generals. And by the 2nd century, all of that empire had been reduced to 4 parts. And the land of Israel was lodged between 2 of those significant remainders of the Greek Empire, the Ptolemaic Empire, which is modern-day Egypt, and the Seleucid Empire, which is Syria and further east. The descendants of one of Alexander's generals led the Ptolemy Empire, another general, the Seleucids. By the 2nd century, the Seleucids had the upper hand. And one of the Seleucid kings during the time of the writing of Daniel was named Antiochus Epiphanes IV. Now we're in the season of Epiphany. Epiphany means God revealed. So this guy named Antiochus gave himself the last name Epiphanes. What's he saying? I am God's gift to the world. Have you ever known anybody who ought to be named Antiochus Epiphanes? If you're God's gift to the world, you really don't tolerate too well people praying to another god. So Antiochus Epiphany would torture and kill Jewish people for sport. The people were going through a horrific time when they read the story of Daniel. And Daniel talks about the horrific reign of the beast with 10 horns and 4 wings. Why? To say, that's where you are right now. I know that you're in the middle of that reality. But one day, if you'll keep reading and get to verse 11, you'll read about that reality being transformed. Are you in a place of hard reality right now? Are you in a place that's just difficult to bear? You need to be reminded that that reality is not your destiny. God has more in store. Isn't that the power of a vision? Isn't that the power of what Dr. Martin Luther King gave people? The power of a transforming vision. One of the great vision speeches of the 20th century, I Have a Dream. Many people say it is the greatest vision dream speech. Go back and read it today. Pay attention to how much of that speech is not about the future dream, it's about the current reality. Dr. King talks about the manacles of separation and the chains of oppression. How America has defaulted on its promissory note that all people are created equal. And after so much grounding of this speech in the current reality of the day with just a few sentences, then Dr. King says, I have a dream. I have a dream of black children and white children holding hands in the land that was once possessed by slave owners. I have a dream, he says, for his own children, that one day in this country they would no longer be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their care. What did he do? He put a dream in us. He put a picture in our hearts. So that here in the year 2017, when we continue to deal with the scourge of racism and the separation of races, we don't give in to it and we say, well, that's just how it's always going to be. Because we say, no, there's a better reality. There's a better reality worth living toward. And I'm not going to give up. So let's bring that back to a personal level. Whatever you're dealing with today, whatever realities that are holding you back from being that person at your most vibrant and your happiest, what is one thing that could transform that reality? What is one thing that could transform that reality? Well, that moves us to another important observation about vision. And that is, vision is a picture of God's preferred future. That's really a good definition for vision. What is vision? It's a picture of God's preferred future. When you can begin thinking about the one thing that could transform reality, the next step is to cast it into a picture, because then it starts to get clear and it starts to get specific. There's a statement in the book of Habakkuk. Then the Lord answered the prophet and said, write the vision, make it plain on tablets. A vision remains a pipe dream until we get it specific. Jamelin says that in the Getting Ahead class that happens on Wednesday nights, they have an exercise at the end of the experience that all of the participants in the class are encouraged to do. They're invited to create a picture for their lives. But it's really two pictures. On one half of the page, or if they're doing it as a mental exercise, on one half, create a picture that looks like your life when you started the classes. In other words, something that describes your present reality that would show what is keeping you from living the life that you believe God has for you. And then, on the other, what does that preferred future look like? Well, there was a woman in the class, this last recent series of classes, who got to the end with this exercise. When she started the class, she was barely living paycheck to paycheck. She was struggling to live within a budget. She could not save any money. She couldn't afford to buy a home. She didn't have a car to be able to get to work. So she learned some simple principles in this class about how to budget and do other things. So on this other side of the page, she had a picture of her house, a garden, car, and then below it, she had these horizontal lines on top of each other. And Jamelyn said, now I get most of the picture, but what are the horizontal lines? She said, those are the deposit slips I'm going to be putting in my savings account. Her vision was that specific. Making savings deposits. That was a dream. But looking at those deposit slips, she said, that's what I'm living toward. If you're in one of the small groups for this series, then you already have your journal. And if you weren't here last Sunday to pick up the kit for making changes stick, in which the journal is a part of that, there are some available just outside at the Connect Here table. So after worship, make sure you pick up a kit. And in the journal this week, you're invited to draw that picture. So what is in your picture? What is in your picture? If you can imagine yourself at your most vibrant, at your happiest, and there are realities that are getting in the way, what is the one reality that could transform it, and what does that look like? What would be the picture of God's preferred future for your life? You know the commercial that asks, what's in your wallet? What's in your picture? And then one last thought about vision. And that is, vision requires something of us. Vision requires something of us if it's a grand vision. Again, look at the words of Martin Luther King Jr. Human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. Every step toward the goal of justice requires sacrifice, suffering, and struggle. The tireless exertions and passionate concern of dedicated individuals. A vision worth having, a vision that's God's preferred future. It's going to involve struggle, but we're willing to make it. We're willing to make the sacrifice when the pain of our present reality becomes less than the pain of change. When the pain of staying where we are right now gets to be too unbearable, then we're willing to bear the pain to make change. I mentioned Charles Duhigg's book last week, The Power of Habit. He starts this whole book telling the story of a woman named Lisa. She had been invited to a gathering of the National Institute of Health. There were people who were studying why it is some people can make radical changes in their lives and other people don't. So the people who seem to make these changes successfully, what is different about them? Now, Lisa, the woman who was meeting with them, started smoking and drinking when she was 16 years old. She became obese. Just 4 years before that interview, she was more than $10,000 in debt. She had not held one single job in her life for longer than 12 months. But the woman who was sitting in front of them that day was 70 pounds lighter, had not smoked a cigarette or taken a drink in the 4 years, was in a very successful job she had been in for 3+ years. She was toned and athletic and in shape. And they just said to her, What changed? She said, Cairo, Egypt. Her husband had come home one day and told her that he was leaving her for another woman. And the shock of that sent her into such a depression. She said, I've got to escape my life. I've got to get away somewhere. And she realized she had not yet maxed out one of her credit cards. So she spent the rest of that credit card to go to Egypt on a tour. The first night that she was there, still in jet lag, she awakened early in the morning to the Muslim call to prayer. She was trying to wake up in a stupor, reached for a cigarette, but instead started trying to smoke her writing pen. She threw it down. She was walking across the room in the dark, knocked over a water jug. She just felt like, this is my life. It's just falling apart. And she fell down and she started crying and she just said, what is one thing I can do to change my life? Just one, that's all I need. When the sun came up, she looked out of her window. She could see the desert and she had a vision. She had a vision to come back and trek across the desert in Egypt. But she knew if she was going to do that, she had to stop smoking. Now, forget the fact she didn't have the money to do it. She couldn't afford it. She would need to lose weight. There are all kinds of things that would have to change. But she didn't worry about it. She said, I've got to stop smoking. That I can do. I'm going to stop. And so she did. But you remember what we talked about with Keystone Habits last week? One thing that you do that can start to impact others? Because she started doing that one thing, she started doing other things. And before long, she became a transformed person. Why? Because of a vision that says, one day, I'm going to walk across that desert. That's the power of a vision. A vision that inspires us to do one thing within our control, as hard as it might be, but we start walking toward that picture. What's the vision of your life? Go back to Carver's experience in the cathedral that day. If heaven is an image of God's preferred future for our lives, why not just gut it out in this life until we die? And then we'll know that life will be better. That's one way to go about it, isn't it? To just get tired of trying to get through the resistance in life and say, I'm just going to live out my days and just keep on the pattern I'm on, and one day I'll die and then I'll get to that place. That's one way to go about it. Or another way is to say, life is better when I get better. If I just take one step toward that vision of myself every day, life is better when I get better. Did you know that the idea of resurrection did not start with Jesus? It's actually in the book of Daniel. The very last verse in Daniel is an angel speaking to Daniel in a vision. As for you, go your way until the end. You'll rest, and then at the end of days, you will rise to receive your eternal inheritance. In Daniel is the concept of resurrection. And Daniel said, life is better to live every day going one step closer to that dream. 2 months before he was assassinated, Martin Luther King Jr. preached at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. 2 months before, listen to what he said. Every now and then I think about my death, and I think about my funeral. I'd like someone on that day to say that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to give his life serving others. I'd like someone to say that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to love somebody. I want you to be able to say that day that I did try to feed the hungry. I want you to be able to say that I did try to live my life clothing those who were naked. I want you to be able to say that I did try to visit those in prison, that I tried to love and serve humanity. I won't have any money to leave behind. I won't have the fine and luxurious things of life to leave behind. I just want to leave behind a committed life. I want to leave behind the legacy of someone who believed life really does get better when we try to be better. How about you?